This is the John Clayton Show.
Brought to you by Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
And if you were waiting to see the golf, hear the golf show, you'll be able to hear that at noon because, again, we've got expanded programming here on Saturday. I'm now going from 8 to 10. Seattle Sports Saturday is coming up from 10 to 12. Golf show will be on at 1 o'clock. Cougar show is going to be on from 1 to 3. And we take some of the great replays that we have of Huddle and Thursday night show that we have. All those different things are going to be together. So kind of a great day here on this Saturday that we're back doing more on Saturday, and we're taking your phone calls at 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Remember, of course, I'll be going now from 8 until 10 to take your phone calls, and we go to Patrick in Kent. Hey, Patrick.
Hey, good morning, John. Thanks for extending the show to 10 o'clock. Good to hear.
Yeah, I'm very happy to do that. I've been kind of asking about it, and I know that Curtis and Taylor have been trying to get back, and you know now what's happened as far as that, because you know they were able to go ahead, because it was tough because you know nobody was allowed in the studio, and of course I've been working from home now for over two decades, and so it was no problem for me, but of course you can't have two, three people at the station at the same time before. Now that's kind of opened up, and of course they're able to work remote and do all those things, so it's kind of a good way. But hey, we're back.
Okay, I want to talk about the Seahawks defense.
Yeah.
You know, we need, what is going on here? You know, too much, you can't go to the Super Bowl by having a defense that doesn't have a pass rush and doesn't have secondary coverage.
Yeah, but see, understand we're in a different age this year than we are. I mean, the pass things do not stand, right? I'll give you an example. The Tennessee Titans have been to the playoffs the last couple of years, right, or two out of the last three or whatever. Would you consider them a good team with a good defense with Mike Vrabel coaching?
I mean,
you know, they're giving up over 25 points a game. And, you know, like, for example, on Sunday, they had to get 42 points to win their game against a bad Houston team. Okay, look at the Green Bay Packers. Green Bay Packers, you know, they're giving up, you know, more than 24 points a game, and they're giving up a lot of yards. I mean, this is now what it is this year with the offense, and until defenses league-wide can figure it out, you know, this is just going to be where it stands. And so now we're the first five games for Seattle, they took on really good quarterbacks, and depending on where you want to put Ryan Fitzpatrick. And so that was one, other than division games, that was one of their toughest stretches of quarterbacks, because you're going against two MVPs, you know, Cam Newton and Matt Ryan. Then, you know, Dak Prescott, until he got hurt, was leading the league by far in passing yards, and, you know, he was getting over 30 points a game. You know, Kirk Cousins, you know, he's having an off season, but it's just the reality is that, you know, whether it's New Orleans, all these different teams right now, is hard to be able to play defense. And, you know, you've got no holding penalties. You've got all these different things. And so it's just a sorting out period. So don't write off the defense yet. And understand the old rules were saying, hey, you can't go to the Super Bowl and win with a bad defense. Well, let's put it this way. If this team plays the Green Bay Packers, are they going against a great defense? And the answer is no. If they're playing New Orleans, are they going against a great defense? The answer is no. And so that's where the reality is, and that's why it's a matter of what you need. And Troy Aikman said it on the broadcast on Sunday last week. It's like, this is a year where you don't judge teams initially by yards allowed. You judge them if they're able to make key stops. And this team, Green Bay and others, are making key stops.
Yeah. So the NFL is mostly an offensive-minded league now.
Really?
Right?
Yeah. I mean, it's, and by the way, just to give you, Andrew Siciliano and the NFL Network people came up with this, and it's still holding up. The last time you've seen offensive numbers like this in a game, and a game each week, is back in 1961 in the AFL. That's how the scoring is. I mean, you can't even have an NFL season to match this. And so you have to kind of go by different rules and different themes and different thoughts to be able to stand what's happening in this game right now.
Okay. Thank you, John.
All right, Patrick. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Victor in Auburn. Hey, Victor.
Hey, John. Another great show.
Good. How are you? Thank you.
I'm doing great. Hey, congratulations on getting that second hour back.
Well, I've been trying, and we've been all trying, and so we did get it.
Yeah, I'll be happy to announce it when they give you the third hour back, too, whenever it happens. Hey, I think I bought some weed from the Manny brothers over there by the SeaTac Mall one time about 7 years ago.
From which brothers?
The Manny brothers.
Who are the Manny brothers?
Is the same ones who selling you the sandwich, John? It's a joke.
Oh, but, okay, yeah.
Hey, do you think the Broncos can negotiate with Bowles on maybe extending his contract, even though they declined his fifth-year option?
Yeah, they can. I mean, it's happened. I mean, you know, it's kind of rare because if you don't put the fifth-year option, then the player tends to leave. But, no, I think they can still do it. I mean, because you don't know what his market's going to be because of the, you know, the way the money's going to go down $20 million into the cap. So, yeah, they can. Now the question is, do they want to?
Well, I mean, I know with the new rules of them not calling as many holding penalties, that's really benefited his career or benefited his season. But they've also, I don't know if it's Pro Football Foe, whoever comes up with the stuff, they rated him as one of the top, two or three left tackles in the AFC right now.
Hmm. Interesting. Of course, what you wonder about is that how, because I know I'm working on this today. What is the drop off right now on tackles? Period, and offensive linemen. Because I counted there's, you know, between 20 and 25 offensive linemen on injured reserve. That doesn't count the players that have opted out on the offensive line. And so there's a big shuffling of those numbers, and you know, it continues to shuffle. Like, you know, we just saw Taylor Lewan go on the injured reserve list. And he's going to be out for some time. And he was a good left tackle. So, yeah, there's a big shuffling right now. But if you have a chance to get him, then you try to get something done.
Do you think that the NFL should have offered the people who decided to opt out at the beginning of the season a chance to opt back in once the testing picked up and the rules were a little stricter?
No, I think they did it the right way because, you know, it just gets too confusing, you know, because what ends up happening is that, you know, if you have to have that first game where you're on the roster to get the guarantee. And obviously, if you opt out and opt back in, then it goes and, you know, if you're opting out and if you notice most of the 69 players that opted out were big guys. You know, they were the guys that were defensive tackles, offensive linemen, and you know, it's one where if they don't feel safe about it, you know, it's better just to have that decision and have a deadline so you know what you have. You don't want to create all that kind of confusion.
Hey, another quick one then. Do you think if the NFL cancels any of the games, how does that work with the players' contracts who have bonuses for you know, extra sacks or catches or games played?
Well, for that, you lose. You don't get that. The only thing that the player gains is, as of right now, if you forfeit a game or cancel a game and you don't play it, then they still get their game check. And so that I know that they're trying to work on to see if they find a way to do it. But no, I mean, as far as I mean, anybody like, for example, you know, the Pro Bowl things and all those things. I mean, if you don't have enough of the numbers, then you're not going to get the bonus. And if you had to cancel the game, you know, because, again, what you lose is those per game bonuses. You lose the ability to maybe get that incentive base. But that's just part of the game right now. But as of right now, the players can still get the salary.
All right. Then what? Two last things. Any series coming up? And then with the extended show, I hope that doesn't mean extended calls with Irish Mankey and his QAnon conspiracy theories. Take care, John.
All righty, Victor. No, right now, nothing scheduled with Sirius. You know, Jim Miller is back. He had that one game in Chicago that he had to go fill in on something. I just wait, but it was so much fun the last time I was able to do it. And again, I'm still the main guy they call for the first time on Moving the Chains. And so I sit, I wait, and I hope. And so we'll see when it goes next. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. And of course, if you're hearing my voice and wondering what am I doing here after the 9 o'clock hour, hey, we're on till 10, so give us a call. Load up the phone lines. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com. Now, more John Clayton.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Dakota. Dakota, how are you?
I'm not doing bad. Yourself, John?
I'm doing great. It's great to get the extra hour to be able to take your phone call.
It's wonderful. I appreciate you taking my call. So I had a quick question for you. I was curious. What is your intake on Ryan Neal? I mean, he came out of nowhere. Yeah. I never heard of him before. he's came in to be a spectacular player to help out this team, and does he have a potential to take a starting job anywhere?
Yeah, I mean, let's put it this way. I mean, he's certainly shown he can play, and he's filled in fantastic. And, you know, they're going to need him tomorrow to try to hold down the Arizona Cardinal running offense and, you know, Kyler Murray and, you know, Kenyon Drake and all that stuff. But, I mean, boy, you talk about somebody that came out of the blue, you know, Lano Hill. I mean, unfortunately, now he looks like his season is done. He goes on injured reserve. But I think that you're seeing a great role player and somebody now that can fit in. And, of course, you would figure by next week against San Francisco, Jamal Adams will be back. And so it's a good thing that you know, you pick up somebody. I know they've liked him for the last couple of years, and now, you know, they can see that, you know, he is somebody that you can rely on to try to fill in and if necessary. And so, you know, but again, this team still is so much better when you have Jamal Adams and Quandre Diggs. But at least, you know, in a pinch, if you need something, Brian Neal can perform.
So does that pull up the aspect of this? Is he going to demand more money and possibly take off, go somewhere else if he doesn't get it?
Not really. I don't know if his contract's up next year, but, you know, because he's making the NFL minimum because he's only been around for a limited amount of time. So, no, he's not in a position right now to do too much. But, you know, so, you know, you can figure that he's going to be on the roster next year.
Perfect. Awesome. Did he come from a different team, or did he come out from undrafted free agent, or was he?
I believe he was an undrafted free agent, and of course, I mean, he had been on the practice squad, you know, a couple years ago here, and he bounced around to a couple different places, and then there was the thought that maybe that he was, you know, he was at that stage where he was almost going to be getting out of football, and you know, now he comes back, and they give him the opportunity, and he just has done great.
Well, I appreciate you answering my call, John. I really do. Hopefully you can continue to grow upon what you're doing, and I appreciate you.
Okay. Thank you. Hey, thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN, as we take your phone calls here. And, again, let's go. Who do we have? Let's go to Chris in Everett. Hey, Chris.
Hey, John. Hey. Hopefully get that one more hour. Like, it's so usual for you to get the 3 hours for your show on Saturday. So, anyways, so how is Mrs. Clayton doing?
Doing well.
Oh, that's good. So, anyways,
we had a good Friday night date night last night, so that was good.
That's pretty cool. Hey, nice. Two questions for you for the Seahawks.
Yep.
Number one is, can the Seahawks win this weekend? And I heard their favor. And number two, do you think the Seahawks could? Do you think the Seahawks can go to the Super Bowl this season coming up?
Yeah, because, I mean, here's what it comes down to, particularly nowadays, and it's going to be maybe a little bit different this year because there's only going to be one bye week for the number one seed. There's, you know, with seven playoff teams, now, you know, six of them have to play in that first week of the playoffs. But if you can get that number one seed and they have a great chance to be able to do it, then you have a great chance to be able to go, because you notice, you know, it's tough for a wild card to be able to have three straight road games in this league. And now it's a little different this year because, you know, with limited fans in the stands, that, you know, you don't have that opportunity. But what you do see is that you know, if you have that week off, the ability to have two games, that if you win those games and you have them at home, you can go to the Super Bowl. I mean, that seems to be, you know, where the you know, the sentiment seems to be. So that's where I think it's strong right now. And again, we'll see how this team does in the division. This is going to be the first test, you know, taking on Arizona, because four of the next five games is going to determine if this team is going to be a number one seed. Because, you know, if you can go 4-2 in the division, and then you see the remaining schedule of non-division games, they're 5-0 in non-division games. You know, you look at the remaining five division games, it's going to be a tough one in 2 weeks going against Buffalo. But then, you know, where's it going to be on that Monday night game in Philadelphia? If Philadelphia, you know, they're going to be competing for the division, but again, it's only going to be for the number four seed. How are they going to be, and how's their injury situation? But then you have winnable games against the Giants. You have a winnable game against the Washington football team, winnable game against the New York Jets. And so that's 8-2 or 9-1 in non-division games. And so if you can go 4-2, you got 13, and you're pretty much going to get the number one seed.
Oh, that's pretty cool. You know what? I do not like the wild card, so I like the first round bye. Get that number one seed. So anyways, hey, what do you think about the Seahawks? I know Jamal, what's his name, Jamal Adams.
Jamal Adams,
so
yeah.
So is he coming back next?
I think he'll be back next week. I think they're just being extra cautious. I mean, he was making some progress this week, but not enough. And so I think he's going to be back next week against San Francisco.
Nice. What do you think about the Seahawks with their final wins and losses? What do you think their record will be, the final record?
Yeah, if you're cautious, you go 12-4, but I think there's a chance they can go 13-3. And, you know, I might not have said that because I didn't know if they're going to get off to the 5-0 start. I thought it was going to be maybe 4-1, but again, this is the first 5-0 start that this franchise has ever had. And so that raises the stakes because I thought that they were going to be, you know, 11-win team, 10-win team, and now, you know, getting those five games, that was huge. Now it's a matter of this next five-game stretch where you have four road games, you have all these different games coming up against, you know, division teams, four of the five are division teams. You know, if you go 3-1 in that set, and even if you lose the Buffalo game, they're golden because, again, their closing schedule is so favorable that because, you know, one, you're getting more division home games, you know, because you only have one road game left on in the division. That's at San Francisco. And we'll see where they stand because they're going through the second week of a seven-game stretch that's going to determine if they're going to even be a playoff team.
Yeah. Hey, one more question. Here's my last question for you, John. On my ESPN app, they said, oh, the Buccaneers should go to the Super Bowl. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
So what do you think about that? I mean,
they're a contender for it, but, you know, we'll see. I mean, certainly they're complete in the standpoint that they have a good offense and a lot of talent in that offense, and they have, you know, one of the best defenses. But, you know, we'll see because say what you want, their schedule is a little easy down the stretch. But, you know, I think right now the three main teams competing for the number one seed is certainly Green Bay. You got Tampa Bay. We'll see how they do against the Las Vegas Raiders. And but Seattle is right there in the mix.
And another thing is, I do agree what you said on Bob and David Moore about AB. You know, Antonio Brown, like, thank God he's not coming.
It's like, and again, it's like I knew this was going to be more of a November story. And where I say November, I mean, he wasn't going to be available to be on the field until at least week 9, and that was November. And so everybody was pushing and thinking, oh, something's going to happen here. It's close to happening. Well, guess what? It happened yesterday, and that's October, and he's still a week away from, you know, being cleared to go back on the field. And so I think he would have been more problems than he's worth. Certainly, you know, he had to be humbled in taking something close to the minimum salary. But in the end, I think it's better that he went to Tampa. We'll see how it goes in Tampa. But I think they're in good shape here.
Oh, yeah. So, you know, what Bobby Wagner said, hey, we have the guys what we need.
Yeah.
You know, I do agree what you're saying, John. I agree with Bobby Wagner, and I agree with him. Yeah. But, hey, so, hey. You have a great weekend, John.
Okay.
Go Hawks.
Same to you. Thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Here till 10, John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, more John Clayton on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Taking your calls till 10. Let's go to Corey in Puyallup. Hey, Corey.
How you doing there, Jason?
I'm doing great. It's just great to be able to have this extra hour to take your phone call.
Exactly. I figure that's why you did it.
That's why we did it. So everybody call so we can continue doing this.
Yep. I got a question. It's not about the Seahawks necessarily. I don't know. I think there's some weird stuff going on in New Orleans with Michael Thomas. What do you
Agreed.
Think?
Oh, there's no question. It's like we don't know the full details. Of course, that's the thing. What we didn't know, we didn't know the full details because Mike Tomlin did such a great job of not letting it public, you know, the problems that Antonio Brown and Le'Veon Bell created through the years. And now we start to find out that there's a little bit more to the 150 catches that you get last year from Michael Thomas. I mean, you find out now that, he can be a little snooty with his trainers, you know, getting on their case. He punched out a teammate.
I could see him going to Tennessee.
What's that again?
I could see him going to Tennessee.
They're not going to, they can't, first off, I mean, he's making $18 million a year and, they can't, I mean,
He'd be a good fit there though, I think.
What's that again?
He'd be a good fit there though, I think.
He would, yeah, because he's such a talented receiver.
I mean,
but
he'd
again,
be a good fit anyway, really.
Yeah, because again, you're. I mean, listen, this right now, the top two receivers in football, even though Thomas isn't playing, Michael Thomas one, DeAndre Hopkins number two. I mean, he's that good. But
yeah,
what's going to be interesting now is that the Saints, you know, because you know now Thomas suffered a hamstring injury to go with his high ankle sprain, so he's not going to play tomorrow. And
I feel like it's weird too because Michael Thomas usually plays through most of his injuries, so there's something up.
Yeah, well, no, it's like the high ankle sprain. I mean, that's a 4 to 6 week injury.
And, no, I agree.
And so, and obviously, in practice this week on Wednesday, trying to practice on it, you know, caused more problems.
He's
and,
also one of the quickest healers, though. That's
he is. Yeah, yeah.
Thing.
I mean, it's kind of like you know, he and Jarvis Landry have been kind of in that same boat. You know, I know Landry's been fighting some injuries this year, but he just doesn't tend to miss. But again, you know, when you suffer, because I mean, I go back into the old days in the 70s. You know what they used to call the high ankle sprain? A broken
I'm only
leg.
27, John.
What's that? Yeah, it's a broken leg is what they called it. Because
basically,
what it is,
yeah.
If you look around the ankle and you see those small bones down there, well, you do damage to those small bones and they separate. And so, because I remember Jack Lambert was one of the first that you know, I knew that suffered one of those. You know, obviously, they've been going for years. But
didn't
they used
Russ
to call that broken
one
leg.
As well?
Was that again?
Didn't Russ have one?
Yeah, he did. I mean, he had a high. In fact, remember that season?
He played the whole year through, right?
Well, opened up. He suffered the high ankle sprain in the opening game against Miami. And
yeah.
Then 3 weeks later against San Francisco, he suffered the MCL injury. And it was a bad MCL injury, and he fought through it.
Well, that's why he's the MVP.
Absolutely. And of course,
have a good day, JT.
All right, Corey, hey, thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Robert at Shoreline. Hey, Robert.
How's it going, John?
It's going fantastic because we got this extra hour to take phone calls.
I'm loving it. I was excited. I thought I missed you at 8:59. I thought you were done. So I guess my question is, looking at the teams that Arizona has played so far, who's laid down the roadmap how to slow down Kyler Murray, and then what teams have been the most success against, Arizona's defense? Because I feel like Dallas, really, it was they have all the weapons, but without Dak, they weren't really able to show too much of, you know, being successful against the D.
Yeah, what it seems like what you need to do is that you need to kind of keep him in the pocket as best you can. Don't let him get outside the pocket too much because, you know, as talented as he is with his arm strength and everything else, he tends to be a little bit more inaccurate, and he has a tendency where he can maybe throw an interception or two, or like in the case we saw last week in the Monday night game, you know, he overthrew. I mean, here's Larry Fitzgerald wide open in the end zone, nobody near him, and he overthrew him, and he had 20 yard pass down the left side to DeAndre Hopkins, which should have been a 20-yard gain, and he overthrew that. And again, I mean, he's good. Again, you know, that when you start to think about where this division is, you know, it's going to start to shift. You know, particularly San Francisco has a lot of free agents next year. The Rams still are going to be good, but all four teams are going to be good. But I think the Arizona Cardinals are that rising team that once they get some things together on defense, they're going to be really, really tough. And again, they're tough right now. They're 4-2, but, you know, losing to in the opening game to Carolina, that was not good. And then losing to Detroit was sinful. A home game to Detroit, but again, I think in that game
barring injury, is Kyler ever gonna? Are they ever gonna slow him down as far as running him? Because it just doesn't seem sustainable. He's quick. No one can catch him, but. I just don't see that in the NFL being a long-term.
No, it catches up to you. It's like even, I mean, you know, what everybody was saying last year with the 14-2 season, is it sustainable for Lamar Jackson? And I know he had a good running day last week, but he's not off to the same start running the football as he was all last year. And you're right. I mean, you've seen it with Russell Wilson. You know, as good as he is running the football, I mean, it catches up to you at some point. I mean, most teams now are starting to get the more mobile quarterbacks. I mean, that's what you have coming out of college, and that's what's going to be there. But at some point, it does catch up to you to a certain degree.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, and I wish good health and everything for you and your wife.
Thank you so much.
Okay.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Seth in Lacey. Hey, Seth.
Oh, hey, Professor, sir. I'm really anxious. I'm an anxious Seahawks fan.
Okay.
And I'm seeing us go with Russell, letting him cook, trying to get that MVP for him. I see this historically bad defense, and I know we're 5-0 undefeated, but I just don't see us going to the Super Bowl with this combination. Tell me why I'm wrong. Tell me what ease my soul.
Okay, easing your soul. Just study the stats of the Green Bay Packers. Okay, same thing. You know they've got problems, and also look at the New Orleans Saints. A defense is considered to be one of the most talented in football. They're giving up a lot of points. It's just the reality. Tennessee in the AFC, talented defense. They got, you know, Jadeveon Clowney. It's hard right now to stop teams, but also the idea is if you're talented enough, particularly with a good offense, you're getting those double-digit leads that now the yards aren't as meaningful as the stops. And so because of that, and again, you know, when you go through a stretch of quarterbacks, and it's more so in the NFC than the AFC, because you look in the AFC, there's, you know, 9, 10, maybe as many as 11 quarterbacks that are in their third year or less. You look in the NFC, and it's a gauntlet. I mean, you've got 12 quarterbacks that are making $21 million a year or more, and the only one who hasn't been to a Pro Bowl is Jimmy Garoppolo, who went to the Super Bowl last year. And so when you're facing guys like that, and again, okay, very few holding penalties, okay, you have all the ability to have, you know, just get the rhythm going. How do you think you're going to do yard-wise against Matt Ryan, Cam Newton, Kirk Cousins, and also Dak Prescott? That's what you're looking at. The numbers are a little misleading. The numbers are the numbers. I mean, they're giving up more yards than any team in NFL history. But again, that's the way this year is. It'll sort itself out at some point. But then, you know, let's say, for example, this week's game. If all of a sudden, because you go back and what, about a week ago, Kyler Murray didn't even throw for 200 yards. And so it's like you have a game like that and the yards aren't there. Would you feel a little better? I mean, again, what the most important thing is getting the win. Does that ease it a little bit for you?
I would like to see us establish a third. It does, but, the Antonio Brown, and I know you're glad to be done talking about this, but the reason I felt like it was a valid issue with Seattle was that we really don't have an established third wide receiver. We have a lot of promise, a lot of potential, but I don't see a third receiver just clamping that position down.
Well, I mean, but here's the other thing that kind of missing in the equation. Okay, who are the third and fourth best options? David Moore is good. David Moore does a good job. But also, remember, this team is doubling the number of two tight end sets with Greg Olsen and Will Disley. Are they the third option? Is, Chris Carson the third option catching the ball out of the backfield? Because, again, one thing when you have a running back that's catching the ball as much as he can, I mean, you can go into let Russ cook in the first and second downs.
All right. I feel good.
Okay. Yeah. Because, again, it's like, you know, say what you want. It's like, there's very few little criticism for the offense. And see, the problem I had with Antonio Brown, he takes away from those other options, particularly DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett. I mean, Tyler Lockett gets, you know, 6 catches a game. Metcalf now gets 6.5, and they're both targeted about 7 or 8 times a game. If you put Antonio Brown in, then that means one of the tight ends comes out, so you're not going to have either Olsen or Disley on the field. I mean, you're going to be, you know, maybe throwing more, and when you throw more, you have a chance to get more turnovers or interceptions and things of that nature. You have more chances of getting a sack. I mean, you know, and you basically have to judge it on what teams that you're playing. I mean, yeah, they had about 3 games where they went more 3 receiver sets because Atlanta had young cornerbacks. Dallas had no cornerbacks, basically. They're terrible at the cornerback position. And Minnesota, they were replacing their top 3 cornerbacks from last year. So they're now vulnerable to the pass.
I would never be in favor of anything from taking opportunities away from DK. And I can't believe I'm saying that with how well Tyler Lockett is playing. But DK he's the most exceptional wide receiver I've ever seen the Seahawks. And I've only been a fan for 20 years.
Yeah. Tend to have to agree.
Thanks, Professor. I really appreciate that. Okay. You made me feel a little bit better. I need it because we got another Sunday night game. And I'm sure it's going to be a 31-28
thriller.
Yeah,
they're
we'll
take it to the last place.
Should be close. Hey, Seth, thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
Our thanks for Matt Nelson for producing the show. Our thanks for Matt Nelson for running the show. Our thanks to the station for giving us in a little bit of an extra show, doubling our time from 8 to 10. So we've been loaded with phone calls and hope that can continue now for many, many weeks ahead. Let's go. And, of course, the number is 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. The Saturday Seattle Sports Saturday is coming up next. Let's go to Ken in Newport Beach. Hey, Ken.
Hey, John. Hey, thanks for pushing for more time for us. I've been listening to you since the 90s. So.
I appreciate
that. Quick question on the practice squad. Can you better explain the rules for signings for practice squad?
Okay, the way the practice squad works is that you're allowed 10 developmental players who are young, and you can bring in as many as 6 players who are veterans, and it doesn't matter how many years they can be in the league. And you can see the pattern now set up by Seattle in the sense that they want to bring in guys like Damon Snacks Harrison, Michael Thompson, Ray Armstrong, and Demarius Randall, a former first-round pick who went on the active roster. And then you have the ability each week to take 2 of those players and move them up without having to pay. You move them up and then you can move them back, revert them back to the roster, but you can only do it with a player 2 times. So at some point you have to step up, and then if you really want to keep the guy and want to have him play, then you have to sign him like they did Demarius Randall and get him on the 53-man roster. But you have complete flexibility in that, and it gives you the chance, particularly like in the case of Tennessee, they were able to even bring up a few more because they were so far down as far as that goes. But you have the ability with these players to bring them up and down. But once you get past the 2 times you do it with 1 player, then you can't do it another time. You can't protect them or anything else. But that's what the strategy is. And it just gives you the ability when you need a player, you can get a player. Like, for example, if Joe Sly, who had a COVID positive and all that stuff, he was been cleared yesterday. But if he could not play as a kicker for Carolina, then they could have gone ahead and had the kicker who's on the practice squad and have him up.
So two questions on that real quick, just dollars. So
okay, yeah, that's real simple because it's really hard to negotiate it. But like, for example, for the veterans, the guys that have unlimited experience, they are $12,000, and it's $8,000 for those developmental type guys, those 10 players that are developmental type guys. So that's $12,000 a week.
Right, and they go to the 53. They go up to their minimum or whatever their negotiated salary is.
Yeah. So it's like if it's a developmental guy, it's going to be 1/17 of $610,000, and if it's going to be a veteran, it could be 910 or could be 1050, and it can be 1/17 of that.
And lastly, are you surprised more people aren't stealing like Seattle did with Reed off San Francisco's practice squad?
Well, actually, what happened? You're talking about what it is that one of the problems is if you take somebody and you bring them in past Tuesday, and there's now a 6-day period with COVID testing that is going to delay the chance that you can even have the guy for that week, because if you bring in a new guy, that's why surprisingly this year since week 1 there's only been 5 waiver claims. Only 5, because again, it takes so long to be able to do it, and now it gets tougher each week. Hey, Ken, thank you for the phone call. Let's go to Drew in Tacoma. Hey, Drew.
Hey, John, how's it going?
It's going fantastic.
Good. So, I want to applaud Carroll and Schneider for not signing Brown, because we already went through that situation with Percy Harvin.
Agreed.
And you don't want to ruin what you got. I mean, our receiving corner passing game second to none right now.
Mm-hmm.
So the question I got for you is, Carson and Carlos Hyde are doing a great job. I mean, our pass game seems to be opening up the run compared to in the past where our run games always opened up the pass. And my concern is, we're not hearing a lot about Penny right now, right? And he showed a lot of promise before he got hurt last year.
Right.
So my question is, Carson's runs hard, he's doing a great job, but where are we going to go if we lose Carson? I mean, the guy's doing a really good job, but, you know, Penny and him and Hyde together, I think, would be quite the combo.
Yeah, and of course, I mean, what's going to be interesting is after this game, now Penny's going to be available coming off the practice squad. And, you know, if you bring him on, you now have five running backs. And then what do you do? Do you let Travis Homer go? Do you let DJ Dallas go? Or do you, you know, maybe, you know, take Nick Ballor and let him go, the fullback, and then go with one of the tight ends? Mm-hmm. And so, but, you know, the key right now is that, you know, it's still going to be with Penny having no training camp or anything of that nature. You know, he's not going to be doing much in the immediate weeks that he comes back. But he's eligible to come back this week after this game Sunday. So that, you know, raises a possibility. It makes you deeper at the running back position. It makes you better at the running back position.
Yeah, exactly. And, I mean, the guy was our first-round pick.
Yeah.
He shows a lot of promise. And, I mean, let's just hope it works out. But, that's, you know, everybody's talking about our defense. And, you know, Carroll seems to be that he can figure that out. I'm not as much worried about the defense as, you know, if we lose if we don't have the running back threat from Carson, you know, Carlos Hyde, I think, could do a good job.
Yeah, but, of course, I mean, and you saw that test for two games when Carlos Hyde had the shoulder injury and couldn't play, and so then they had to, you know, rely on what they can get from Travis Homer. Hey, Drew, thank you for the phone call. Let's wrap it up with Lewis in Madrid, Spain. Hey, Lewis.
Hey. Hi, Drew. Can you hear me well?
I can hear you great.
Yes. Okay, how's your wife this morning?
She's doing well. She had a good Friday night date night dinner, so that's going good. And I know she just is finishing up breakfast pretty much right now, so, and then getting up and getting into the chair.
Great, great. I'm happy. I would like to know, according to your database calculations and also about your instinct in the league, when will the Seahawks reach the peak in terms of level and also, I'm trying to tie these up with the cap space opportunities.
It's a great question because it's one that I've studied. And technically, what I would say, it would be next year where they can reach the peak. And the reason I say next year is that, and again, they're at the peak right now where they can maybe win 12, 13 games, but they have a chance to keep the team together, get a couple extensions. They have about $28 million of cap room next year. And with that $28 million, it's not like they're going to go ahead and, you know, go crazy in free agency, but they can, you know, have the ability to not lose players. Because, like, for example, you've got Philadelphia, it's $81 million over, and New Orleans at $61 million. You've got Atlanta at about $25 million over. I mean, they're going to be in tough shape. And so what's going to happen, the landscape of the NFC is going to change because, you know, teams like New Orleans, Philadelphia, Atlanta, you know, they're all going to drop. Because, again, they're going to have to make so many cap hits and make so many changes, or at least in the case of Seattle. San Francisco, for example, they're going to have difficulty. Not that they're going to be too much over the cap, but, you know, they have to figure out a way to re-sign Trent Williams, their left tackle. They have to find a way to try to, you know, do something with Kyle Juszczyk, their fullback. Four top cornerbacks on that team are up, including Richard Sherman. And, you know, they're going to have to let players go like Kwam Alexander and Dee Ford. So there's going to be kind of a changing of the guard. But that's why I say next year, this team has a chance to peak even more because they're not going to have to suffer the losses that other teams, particularly in the NFC, are going to have.
What about the Arizona Cardinals and the Rams?
Rams are going to be still in tough shape. You know, what they've done is that, you know, they've gone really young, but also remember they won't have a first round pick for five straight years. And, you know, they've been doing it with a lot of no names and it's worked well and they're pretty formidable, but, you know, there's no names at running back. There's very few names other than the top three guys on defense. And, you know, they're going to suffer some problems on the offensive line because I figured this could be Andrew Whitworth's last year. So you throw all that together. I mean, I think the Rams are going to be more challenged than Arizona. Arizona still can be in good shape because remember what you're looking at is that you're trying to build around a young quarterback in his rookie contract, and that's Kyler Murray. Hey, thank you for the phone call. Coming up next, it's going to be Seattle Sports Saturday with Curtis Rogers and also Taylor Jacobs. It's going to be coming up next. John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.